A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. How's everything going with you?
I'm good. It's been, actually, like, work's been super busy, but, like, life has been calm. So that's a fantastic thing. It's just been, and we've had some great weather. I'm enjoying it. How about you?
Well, I guess I'm doing pretty well. I just really wanted to give a quick shout out, and I'm sorry if, you know, you don't want me to, but I can't help it. Melissa has gone above and beyond to continue to build us up to try and make it a greater listening experience, and she built a studio in her house.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Let's back up. Amy, her life partner, is in music, right? So Amy already has the full setup. And she shows me things. She's like, put this here. And I'm like, Amy, I don't have that equipment. Like, so either way. So yes, we built a wall. I now have foam boards to kind of keep some of the sound in. I have a mic set up better. So yes, but I'm just trying to stay on your level.
But I think that it goes to show, like, your dedication.
Oh, 100%.
And your willingness to, you know, just bring the best that you possibly can.
And guys, like,
and
we
I love it.
Love
Thank
this.
You for that.
Yeah, and we love this anyway. You know, like, we joked years ago when we first started, which is weird to say it was over a year ago, that if 12 people listen, like, we're happy because we like these conversations and we like these missing persons cases. And, you know, even the last couple episodes, as I'm QAing, I got stuck in the story again and wasn't like, you know, when you listen to something and you just like listen to the story. When I listen to our podcast, I try to like hear for things that you guys wouldn't want to hear. I also make sure that we say things the best possible way. There are times I might text Amy or text and just say, hey, like I said this sentence, like, do we think we need to take that out? Things like that. The last two, I've just been, like, listening to the story, which is a fabulous thing.
I think so. I love it. And if you can hear it twice over, or sometimes three times over, and still be invested like that, I'm super glad.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. For those of you that listened to last week's episode, the Jenna Van Gelderen case, Anthony was in the car, my husband, when we were QAing it. And we got to the end of it, and he was like, so I don't even understand what happened. And I was like, yeah, neither do we.
And that's the problem.
And usually, because he doesn't need to edit himself, he'll be like, oh, well, obviously this happened. And you know what I mean? He has a strong theory that he has no problem expressing. And for this one, he was like, yes. I don't know what happened.
Agreed. But I don't want to go back to that frustration.
Go.
I mean, we'll revisit a new one today. That I can promise you.
I'm excited to hear your case only because I know it was in the media, so I know the name. But I'm excited to hear, like, an actual breakdown.
Well, that's kind of just it. So this case is what I kind of conceptualize as, like, popular, unpopular. I feel like it hasn't really gotten any mainstream recognition. For example, like Maura Murray, you know, non-crime people have heard of that because it's been on an Oxygen special. It's, you know, floated out on social media and things like that. And pretty much a good chunk of the population, I feel like, has at least heard her name, maybe doesn't know the case. This case, I feel like all the true crime people probably know of it, maybe even know it very well, but it's not really mainstream.
Okay.
I myself recognized the name and probably remembered some bits and pieces about it, but I had never done the deep dive or anything like that. So I'm one of those people too. There's so much more to this case than the events. There's these subcultures that I'm going to discuss, and I'm going to do it with the education that I already have. But with that being said, I always have more to learn. So feel free to educate me if I don't know something or if I'm saying something that could be said better. But I am doing my best, and I will kind of educate in bits and pieces as I go along. I thought about kind of doing this education before the case, but I think that we can just talk about it organically and pull bits and pieces out in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, agreed.
So the case I'm going to talk about today is the case of Sage Smith. Sage Smith was born December 13th of 1992. Sage's given name was actually Deshaud Smith. Sage was a transgender female, and she gave herself the name Sage as a teen. Sage was born to Latasha and Dean, but they divorced relatively early on, and each moved on, and Sage gained siblings through her mother. Sage was very close with her grandmother, which this was Dean's mother, so it's her paternal grandmother, and her name was Cookie, which was given to her as like a term of endearment. I mean, when you think of Cookie, you think of someone so sweet and kind and nice. And I watched parts of the Disappeared episode for this case, and everything about this woman deeply impressed me and made me feel loved even from afar. When Sage was a teen, Cookie was actually the first person that Sage came out to as gay, and Cookie was extremely supportive. She kind of responded in the way of, so I've known your whole life, and thanks for telling me, and it changes nothing. I love you. And that's just the kind of person that she was. And if you watch her, I just have to give, like, such props to this woman who is from a different generation, which an older generation often will blame that very fact on not continuing to educate themselves and to try and understand another person's perspective. But Cookie used all the pronouns, how they, quote unquote, should be used. And she was just so respectful and so non-judgmental. I am so over the moon that Sage did have this. Honestly.
Yeah, that's so amazing for someone to, like you said, for the reaction to be like, okay, I love you. Doesn't matter.
And generally, it seems that that is the reaction of the family. People just knew Sage's whole life. And you'll notice that I even use the name Sage. That is how Sage identified. And the pronoun that I will use is she, her.
Okay.
Now, her family in the Disappeared episode kind of interchanges she, her, and he. But that was because Sage didn't appear to mind and was very fluid, kind of going back and forth through traditional male and female roles. So Sage eventually kind of transitioned fluidly through those roles as she got older, and that was very accepted. But someone that did have a hard time in the beginning accepting Sage's sexuality, even before she identified as transgender, was her father, Dean. At first, when Sage came out as gay to Dean, Dean was really upset. Now, I don't know if he knew or he didn't know at all, or was just hoping it wasn't true. But basically, his response was like, don't ever talk to me again. And fortunately, a couple of weeks later, something like that, Dean did come back around and he did whatever he could to make amends with Sage. And they were able to do some good repair in their relationship. Cookie describes Dean in the Disappeared episode as kind of like a man's man. So it was really difficult to conceptualize and understand this part of Sage. But with that being said, anyone who's willing to grow and continue to grow and understand other people's experiences and perspectives, I'm not going to shut the door in their face. You know, I'm glad that they're doing that.
I would agree.
So Sage is described as happy and having that personality, Melissa, that lights up a room. And I actually feel like I know what they're talking about. And I feel like this is probably that person that totally fits that. So Sage was a really good dancer, whether Sage was actually trained or not. I don't know, but you wouldn't know because Sage put up these videos of herself dancing on YouTube, and I've seen them, and they're really good. Like, they're really entertaining, and I just take this gregarious, outgoing personality from that. And I'm like, that's the type of person that truly people navigate towards at school and, like, want to be friends with or be around it or just, like, soak up that energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to me that she was just mesmerizing. So Sage went on to graduate high school and shortly after moved out and moved in with friends. What I should say is that Sage did struggle getting through high school, but fought really hard and was able to do it. I don't really understand the sequence of Sage's placements. For example, like, I know that things were a little rough between Sage and her biological mother, and she did eventually move in with Cookie, which probably is a good reason why they're so close. I don't know if Sage was going back and forth between her mother's and her grandmother's, but I do know that it seems as though this was like a next of kin foster placement. And what I mean when I say that is that nowadays in the foster care system, what they really try to do is instead of placing you in a home with a complete stranger, they'll find your next of kin and place you there. But you still do get the benefits, for lack of better words, of foster care. Like, you do get the financial assistance until you're an adult. So that might be in the form of a stipend, as though to help this caregiver out. So Sage was able to move out with the help of this money that she had acquired through foster care. So I'm not exactly sure if Sage was working or anything like that, but she had some financial leverage. She had some safety and an ability to live in an apartment. This brings us to right before the disappearance, and this is Thanksgiving. And if I didn't say so before, Sage is from the Charlottesville, Virginia area, and that is where she got her apartment. She wasn't too far, like, she didn't move across the country or anything like that. She was still relatively close to her family. So on November 19th of 2012, Sage was actually at a party, and there had been an altercation at this party between Sage's friend and another guest. And this turned into a situation where Sage got involved in this altercation. And I mean, it happens all the time when your friend is, you know, getting messed with or whatever. As a teenager, you want to step in and protect your friend. And this friend was Jamel. And Sage ended up in, like, not just a verbal altercation, but it turned into some type of physical altercation. And this resulted in the police being called, and a report was filed against Sage. This resulted in kind of like a falling out, if you will, between Jamel and Sage. I think Sage was, in essence, upset that Jamel just kind of let Sage step in and just kind of, like, bowed out, and Sage kind of got all the repercussions from this, right? And it doesn't seem like Jamel, I don't know if it's cared or whatever, but it left a bad taste in Sage's mouth. So that was that. On 20th, Sage had contact with her father, and they talked on the phone. She had asked for money. It was something simple, like to get her hair done or something like that. She expressed excitement about Thanksgiving and going over to her mom, seeing her mom's new house. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. At around 5 o'clock, Sage was at home, and she was getting ready to go out on a date. Sage was meticulous about getting ready. Like, she really cared about her appearance. She did a great job of presenting herself in the best way. If you can just imagine someone literally taking hours to do their makeup and they look like perfection, this is probably it. When she was done, she woke up her roommate, who was sleeping on the couch, and she said she was going out and would see her later. Her roommate kind of just said, yep, thanks, whatever. Fell back asleep. The roommate woke up in the morning of the 21st, and the apartment was dark and empty. And I don't mean that in the sense that, wow, someone looks like they picked up, left, and moved on with their life. No, it was just like when nothing's touched, you could tell no one had come home. it was bizarre. So Sage's roommate actually attempts to call Sage. The phone goes right to voicemail. This is very unusual. Sage is attached to her phone. I mean, I'll say right here, right now, that Sage, I mean, for myself, if you can't get a hold of me, you should be concerned. Although, I'm not that great answering on the spot.
I was going to say.
But I'm going to call you back.
Or your son just hits ignore on your calls because he's playing a game on your phone.
Oh, that does happen. So just I guess I'm thinking, like, you should be very concerned. But, yeah, I guess I'm not one of those people. But I know so many people that respond immediately to my text messages. They are so good about communication. And there are people that I would be really concerned about if they didn't respond to me.
I'm one of those people. I always answer the phone.
Yeah, you do. And you text back typically pretty fast. So, I mean, you could see probably the concern immediately.
Absolutely.
Sage's roommate pretty soon contacts Cookie. Cookie attempts to get in contact with Sage. Same thing, voicemail. Cookie and the roommate basically agree that if by the end of the day she doesn't turn up, they're going to call the police. And they end up having to call the police. Police were notified. It appears on the surface that they did all the right things in starting the investigation and pursuing this investigation. Naturally, everybody in the family is trying to contact Sage. They're all getting the same result. So I think part of the reason that the police initially didn't write this off as one of those things where, oh, well, they're an adult or pretty much an adult. They can do whatever they want is because Sage was transgendered. And they know that violence, aggression, microaggressions, all that stuff can come to someone of the transgender population. So that was a concern, and I think that they just wanted to rule it out if that was a possibility, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
So they put the word out. They're looking all over for Sage, and they attempt to get Sage's cell phone records to start that investigation. But Sage's family doesn't sound like it's from an angry place, but more like from an anxious, we have to do something place, and they start doing their own investigation. By luck, they are able to get into Sage's phone and kind of get into social media and things like that. They fortunately guessed passwords, and they were able to kind of narrow down that Sage had been on the phone the night before and around the time that she was last seen. They also discovered that after Sage left around 5, her stepsister just by chance, like, passed her on the sidewalk going down the street, and they had a very brief conversation in which Sage was on the phone at the time, and this is about 6:30 or so in the evening, and they had a brief little chat. Sage's stepsister was able to remember Sage saying something like, "I'm almost there," something along the lines of, "I'll see you in 5 minutes," and then they went their separate ways. And that is actually the last time that Sage was seen by anybody. And that's nearly the last time that there was anything going on Sage's phone, and Sage had never been seen again.
Okay.
There are quite a few details that are important, and this will bring us kind of into theories. So with the help of the parents' investigation, they came across the last phone number that was in Sage's phone as a conversation that had happened. And Sage's father actually posted this number on Facebook, hoping that someone would come forward and say, "Hey, you know, that's me." Someone did come forward, and this person was, I apologize if I'm saying the name wrong, Yami Ortiz. And he didn't say that it was his number, but he said it belonged to someone named Eric McFadden. Eric McFadden and Sage had been in some type of relationship. Don't know to what extent, and I think that could be speculated what kind of relationship it was. So Eric and Sage had been having conversations. Eric actually was in a relationship with a female. Eric was kind of living or had at least this secret part of his life where he was seeing Sage, but it was under the premise that this was a secret relationship.
Okay. I don't like where this is going.
Right. And this is the person that was last in contact with Sage right before the disappearance. So naturally, they're trying to find Eric. And Eric eventually left town and did not cooperate with police. He basically left his whole life and apparently went out west. When police attempted to locate Eric, they've been unable to find him. And to this day, he's never come back.
Wait, what?
Yes.
So hold on.
And no one can find him.
Is he missing or is he evading?
It appears as though he's evading. Okay. Because eventually he did send an email to his significant other just apologizing for the whole thing, replaying the events of that evening and everything, which differed from his original statement to police about it. So as of right now, he is a person of interest. Police have announced that he is a person of interest and do want to talk to them, but they've actually made a couple of trips out west to look for him and have not been able to find him.
Okay. I don't like any of this, but keep going.
That brings us to probably one of the most popular theories, is that something happened between Sage and Eric, which resulted in something probably horrible, and Eric is now evading. The other theory is that Sage fell victim to some violence in the community. Being that of a transgender woman, they are faced with, to some degree, hate and aggression from, you name it, people that are close to them in their life or people just randomly walking down the street. Another possibility is the person that Sage got into a fight with previously at the party, which was Jamel. Another theory has something to do with Sage's actual roommate, Aubrey, who was caught sometime later using Sage's food stamps. And another friend was witnessed as having one of Sage's lockets in her possession, which I don't know. I don't understand, but I wouldn't want someone's missing things. But that's just me. And there isn't actually any talk of leaving her life. I didn't even really come across that in any way, shape, or form. It just seems like these 3 to 4 theories are namely the ones that are the most prevalent ones. There was someone that eventually came forward and said that they had seen Sage at Wild Wings, which was kind of like a bar, pub type place, alone.
It's a restaurant.
At 7 p.m. on the night that she disappeared, but there was no surveillance and really no anyone that came forward and said that they had seen her too. So that really went nowhere. But other than that, there have really been no sightings of Sage anywhere. No surveillance, no nothing. As far as I'm concerned, after that 6:30 encounter with her stepsister, Sage literally vanished out of thin air.
Okay, so let me start with, is there any evidence she met up with this Eric McFadden guy?
Well, it appears as though they were supposed to meet up, and there was some indication that... Well, let me back up. So there were text message exchanges between the two, and this led up to right before, or right even during the encounter with Sage's stepsister. And it appears as though Eric maybe thought that Sage blew him off. I kind of get the impression that maybe Sage was pulling away or putting up a boundary, maybe, or something like that. And Eric was persistent, maybe, and Sage was just holding that boundary. But either way, Eric was like, I feel blown off. So if that's actually valid, that would be a reason for someone to get very upset.
So I want to say, well, obviously he didn't see her, so who knows, you know what I mean? But then why leave town?
Well, exactly. I mean, do you want to escape your, for lack of better words, dirty laundry being aired? Well, maybe. But on the other hand, whether you're here or not, people know. And can you not face that over potentially going to jail? I don't know.
I don't either. Well, I mean, obviously, it came out anyway. You know, like, it came out because as the investigation happened, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you're thinking he was embarrassed and he decided that, you know. But then when it all came out anyway, why wouldn't he have just come back?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I think.
You know, if he's that embarrassed, and I get that, like, If you're cheating on your girlfriend with another person in general, it's embarrassing. But with the stigma that True. Comes with someone that's transgender, that's an additional layer of judgment, so to speak. Because
Right.
people aren't going to like you cheating. And then with what some people see as, you know, a alternative lifestyle or whatever it might be, I could see that being stressful. Fine. But
yes,
that being said, when it all came out anyway, now not only does he have to deal with the shame of cheating, with the having to explain who he was cheating with, he's now looks mm-hmm. like he is a murder suspect potentially or involved in a disappearance. So I don't know why he wouldn't come out and say, like, hold up, wait a second. Do you see my point?
100%. I absolutely agree with you. It doesn't make any sense to me. And I try to keep an open mind. I mean, we have our thoughts on O.J. Simpson, for example, right?
Right.
And I'm coming around to your side that I question if he actually committed the murder. I know, unpopular opinion, don't hate me. But he fled, and that didn't change our thoughts that he might not be guilty, right?
Right.
So could this guy be fleeing for a reason that we just can't see or we don't know right now? I don't know.
Well,
I guess if I believe that about OJ, then I have to look at it in this case.
Right. And my opinion is he probably initially disappeared because of the embarrassment of everything coming out, right? That's mm-hmm. my gut. But I don't understand the staying away.
I don't know if Eric McFadden is from the Charlottesville area.
Oh, that's a good question.
But I would have a harder time understanding if that's where he was, like, born and raised and continued to stay away. You know, like, how do you leave the only home that you've known and never go back?
But I agree with you. I do. Let me just say this, though. I don't think she walked away and is staying away on her own.
I don't either. If anything, I don't think that Sage would want to do that to Cookie. I don't know if Sage could go without talking to Cookie. The way that I see their relationship, it just seems so special and meaningful to Sage. And I would bet that Sage is so thankful for everything that Cookie has done for her.
Right. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So that quickly doesn't do much for me. And it's not like Sage had this abundance of money to stash away. Whatever Sage had was enough for her to live on, right? None of her accounts or anything was used after. So I don't know exactly how you'd accomplish that. And yeah, I'm not sure.
So walk me through again what the roommate's suspicion is because they were wearing her stuff and using her food stamps.
Well, it was two different people. So the roommate was using the food stamp card, and another person had Sage's locket, which I guess I have to say that's a crappy thing to do, but I don't necessarily think that a murder ensued or something along those lines, and then they go using her things. I think that it's perfectly plausible to just be a person that doesn't have the means and taking advantage of an opportunity.
That's what I was going to say, is it's likely a poor, like, a student or whatever, and they're just like, hey, you know what? Like, if she's not using it, no one will know the difference. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I don't think...
Exactly.
I don't necessarily think that they're involved.
Right. And I don't know that there's anything that I read, at least, that there was thing going on with those particular people in her life that would warrant escalating to murder. I don't imagine that it's easy to live with someone or that it went without disagreements and stuff, but I didn't read anything that supported something tragic that happened in their relationships warrant that.
I'm like in my head about this. I guess it's possible, though, that she encountered foul play other than people she knew, right? Like, is that a theory?
Yes. There is some thought that it could have been random violence, if you will. I mean, I don't know how random it would be, or at least it would be targeted violence. And I believe Eric McFadden in an email to his girlfriend after he left, stated something along the lines of they were approached on the street and harassed, and nothing came of it, but it sounds like that's where Eric was trying to shift the focus of the investigation.
Yeah, but why not come home and say that?
Well, that's also true.
Ugh. It irritates me so much that he's just gone and disappeared.
Oh, for sure. And how do you do that so successfully? It's not some guy that was planning on doing this for years. I mean, an event happened. For whatever reason, it irked him, and he left. No prep time. Nope. I mean, I think that's bizarre.
I don't know. I'm stuck on him being disappeared.
Here's the other thing, too, about a random group of people. If their intent is to assault someone on the street, I feel like you do just that. You assault them and you likely leave them there. It's not a planned thing. It's you see someone, you initiate violence, and then you walk away. I mean, I know that sounds weird, but are you really going to pick up that person from the middle of the street and then dispose of their body, further linking you to them?
No. And if it was some kind of assault, I would think that she would have just been left there.
Well, right. So that is possible, but do you think the sporadic random violence...
Oh, this case is giving me a headache.
...resulted in them being able to hide a body that well?
No. No, I think this Eric person knows what happened. I think that he is likely involved. I don't know how or any of that, because if she felt blown off by him, I don't know how they, like, reconnected. If there's no, like, text or calls. You know what I mean? Like, she felt blown off, and how did he reconnect with her?
There's so many questions I have about Eric, okay? So this is a part of his life that he has not been ready to share with the world. And it's not just that. He's keeping it a secret. He has an alternate life with a girlfriend. So to me, that says there is some degree of shame or embarrassment, okay? You're not ready to break up with your girlfriend and live authentically where you want to live. And I'm not saying that sexuality is very fluid, okay? I don't believe you necessarily have to fit into this one box. Like, you can be anywhere on the spectrum. So he could have feelings for his girlfriend. He could have feelings for Sage. And that's perfectly acceptable. But the fact that it's a secret is the piece that tells me that there might be some shame associated with that. Maybe this is the first time Eric has ever been his authentic self or in a relationship with a guy.
Right, and I'm okay with him being shamed because of that. Not like that. I meant, like, I'm okay with him not knowing how to cope with that, right?
Right, but if he's putting himself maybe for the first time out there, he's vulnerable with Sage, and Sage has indicated that the relationship is coming to an end, or I'm going to tell your girlfriend or something, and he feels threatened and backed into a corner, maybe anything's possible?
Sure, anything is possible, but I think it's just, I don't like any of it.
No, and he picked up and left pretty quickly after Sage's disappearance. It's not like he waited 6 months. Like, it was days. So it only indicates to me that they're somehow related. Like, he didn't just happen to say a few days later, you know what? My life here isn't okay, and I'm just going to leave. It's related.
It's 100% related. I just can't figure out.
And you can say to the police, like, I'm living across the country. Call me anytime. Like, he literally hasn't given anybody the whereabouts. That is blatant non-cooperation.
So I guess my question is, where do you land on this?
I feel pretty confident that McFadden has something to do with Sage's disappearance. I guess I would say that if something happened, it was like heat of the moment, passionate type of thing. Like it wasn't intended or planned. I mean, maybe there was premeditation in the minutes or within an hour to 2 hours before, but I don't think that this is some guy that was stewing on this for days and days and days.
But what's the motive?
I mean, I think it could be that Sage was either going to give up this relationship and move on, or a threat to let everyone know his secret. I use threat loosely. Maybe I should say something like that Sage was going to tell Eric's secret.
Okay. Yeah, I just struggle with the fact that Eric has left town and never come back. You know, I just think that if that's where we're at, then that's the end of it. You know, I don't understand why you'd want to, if someone you deeply care about goes missing, why you disappear if you have no reason to be concerned.
Right.
You know, if you have, I don't know.
Right. And we're coming up on 8 years in a little more than a month that Sage has been gone. So I'm not optimistic that Sage has left her life or that it...
I think finding Eric is the key to this.
Absolutely. But I unfortunately don't think that Sage is with us anymore. And I think that Sage probably wasn't with us that very same day. Because I don't think that a person like Sage could stay away this long or just be out in the world somewhere without someone coming forward and saying, I've spotted her. So I think Eric probably had something to do with disappearance and a potential murder, and he is the key, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with you. I think that her roommates were just stupid. For lack of better words, they just didn't think about the consequences of their actions.
And what about Jamel from the party?
No, that was a one-time confrontation. It's not like it was this ongoing thing. It's similar to me to the Brianna Maitland case, which we haven't talked about in over a year. You know?
Oh, right. It's
a confrontation. I don't think it spilled out. I don't think that... I think it was a one-time... This is what it is. I don't know. That's sort of where I land.
Yeah, everything so strongly points to Eric at a bare minimum having some information that's needed to solve this thing. And if he's found, Sage will be found.
I would agree with you.
And that's where I land, and I have a really strong opinion on this one.
And yeah, I just don't know how you could... You know what I want? Hey, would you guys, if anyone has an opinion that Eric is not involved, would you email us and lay out your theory, so to speak? Because I would love to hear someone else break it down and say, oh, well, this is why he's not involved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just going to call out one of our listeners. We've gotten more before this, but this happened this morning. I have an email from a listener that is at least 3 pages long, and it's a dissertation on Brandon Lawson and lays out some great theories. I would love to hear that on Sage Smith. If someone's going to come at us and say it's not Eric McFadden and here's why, please tell us, because I would love to hear the breakdown of it.
Right. In the same way of OJ, like if someone could give me the alternate reason that OJ felt the need to take off in the Bronco.
What I say doesn't count because Amy wants someone else to say it.
But yes, I do.
Either way.
Because I love discussing this with everybody.
Yeah, but let's give Sage some closure.
That's where I'm going to wrap it up for this week. Let us know what you think. If Eric if he's involved in this somehow or not, let us know. And that's where I land.
100%. I agree with you.
Yeah. All right, well, that's it for this week, guys. Thanks for stopping on by.
We have some more episodes and coming next week.
All right. Bye. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.